Вариант 21.
Сейчас вы будете выполнять задание по аудированию. Каждый текст прозвучит два раза. После первого и второго прослушивания у вас будет время для выполнения и проверки заданий. Все паузы включены в аудиозапись. Остановка и повторное воспроизведение аудиозаписи не предусмотрены. По окончании выполнения всего раздела «Аудирование» перенесите свои ответы в бланк ответов номер один. Задание 1. Вы услышите 6 высказываний. Установите соответствие между высказываниями каждого говорящего «AF» и утверждениями, данными в списке 1-7. Используйте каждое утверждение, обозначенное соответствующей цифрой, только один раз. В задании есть одно лишнее утверждение. Вы услышите запись дважды. Занесите свои ответы в таблицу. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданием.
Now we are ready to start. Speaker A.
I've never worked in the private sector, but I enjoy working in the public sector. I currently work for one of the best federal agencies, and it is an easy job. Contrary to popular belief, you do get paid well in the public sector. Of course, you won't have a mansion on a hill or drive a Bentley if you work in the public sector, but you'll live comfortably if you're smart with money. Basically, right now, I get paid pretty decently for doing easy work all day while not having to worry about being laid off.
Speaker B.
I'm a psychologist. There are new challenges every day with my job, and I enjoy it a lot. I love to be able to answer someone's questions and help them out if needed. It really feels good to know that I am contributing to solving someone's problems. I am usually good at giving advice, and people around where I live ask me for help. I would like to make a difference in the world, even if I have only influenced one person. That would certainly make a domino effect, and the whole world might change at least one thing for the better.
Speaker C.
I am also lucky enough to have achieved my ideal job. My husband and I are computer consultants from home together. I do graphics, and he is a programmer. Together we can make just about anything and be at home with our kids. A separate phone line lets us know if the calls are personal or business. The best thing is that I work whenever I want to. The nighttime is when I'm most alert and can think well. Thus, I can produce lots of quality work. I'm never late to work, and I never have to worry about the drive home from the office.
Speaker D.
I currently work in a bookshop. Generally, there are more intelligent customers, book discounts, and even if you already know much about books, you'll learn even more. My ideal job is to be a writer, and my bookshop experience is invaluable. I mean, I learned firsthand how the retail part of the book business works. I have almost finished writing my first non-fiction book, and hope to have it published at the beginning of next year. After that, I plan to write another, and another, and another. Hopefully, I'll become a well-known author and leave my life of a shop assistant behind.
Speaker E.
I work as a bartender to earn my living. I absolutely love my job, especially making drinks, which is almost like an art. I enjoy being around people and talking to them. On the downside, a lot of people think that because they are going out and paying for the dinner, they can treat their server without respect. I know it seems like an age-old complaint, but what it really boils down to is common human decency. People like me work hard for their money and have a lot going on at any given time. I wish my clients were more considerate.
Speaker F.
My ideal profession was executive director for a community service organization that provided home support workers to the elderly, the disabled, and those recuperating from the hospital. I ran the office, supervised 30 home support workers, and coordinated 30 Meals on Wheels volunteers. I was always doing different things throughout the day. My day at work simply flew by, and I couldn't believe it was already time to go home. I could go on and on about this job. I am now not working, as I am disabled myself, but the memories I have from those days sustain me.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now you will hear the texts again. Speaker A.
I've never worked in the private sector, but I enjoy working in the public sector. I currently work for one of the best federal agencies, and it is an easy job. Contrary to popular belief, you do get paid well in the public sector. Of course, you won't have a mansion on a hill or drive a Bentley if you work in the public sector, but you'll live comfortably if you're smart with money. Basically, right now, I get paid pretty decently for doing easy work all day while not having to worry about being laid off.
Speaker B.
I'm a psychologist. There are new challenges every day with my job, and I enjoy it a lot. I love to be able to answer someone's questions and help them out if needed. It really feels good to know that I am contributing to solving someone's problems. I am usually good at giving advice, and people around where I live ask me for help. I would like to make a difference in the world, even if I have only influenced one person. That would certainly make a domino effect, and the whole world might change at least one thing for the better.
Speaker C.
I am also lucky enough to have achieved my ideal job. My husband and I are computer consultants from home together. I do graphics, and he is a programmer. Together, we can make just about anything and be at home with our kids. A separate phone line lets us know if the calls are personal or business. The best thing is that I work whenever I want to. The nighttime is when I'm most alert and can think well. Thus, I can produce lots of quality work. I'm never late to work, and I never have to worry about the drive home from the office.
Speaker D.
I currently work in a bookshop. Generally, there are more intelligent customers, book discounts, and even if you already know much about books, you'll learn even more. My ideal job is to be a writer, and my bookshop experience is invaluable. I mean, I learned firsthand how the retail part of the book business works. I have almost finished writing my first non-fiction book, and hope to have it published at the beginning of next year. After that, I plan to write another, and another, and another. Hopefully, I'll become a well-known author and leave my life of a shop assistant behind.
Speaker E.
I work as a bartender to earn my living. I absolutely love my job, especially making drinks, which is almost like an art. I enjoy being around people and talking to them. On the downside, a lot of people think that because they are going out and paying for the dinner, they can treat their server without respect. I know it seems like an age-old complaint, but what it really boils down to is common human decency. People like me work hard for their money and have a lot going on at any given time. I wish my clients were more considerate.
Speaker F.
My ideal profession was executive director for a community service organization that provided home support workers to the elderly, the disabled, and those recuperating from the hospital. I ran the office, supervised 30 home support workers, and coordinated 30 Meals on Wheels volunteers. I was always doing different things throughout the day. My day at work simply flew by, and I couldn't believe it was already time to go home. I could go on and on about this job. I am now not working, as I am disabled myself, but the memories I have from those days sustain me.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers.
Задание 2. Вы услышите диалог. Определите, какие из приведенных утверждений A-G соответствуют содержанию текста. 1. True. Какие не соответствуют? 2. False. И о чем в тексте не сказано? То есть на основании текста нельзя дать ни положительного, ни отрицательного ответа. 3. Not stated. Занесите номер выбранного вами варианта ответа в таблицу. Вы услышите запись дважды. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданиями.
Now we are ready to start.
This week's summer reader is Mr. Max Mason. By day, he writes for financial newsletters and websites. But in his free time, he manages and writes for his literary blog, The Millions. Mr. Mason lives in Philadelphia, but we have reached him at his parents' home in Potomac, Maryland. Welcome to the show, Max.
Thanks for having me.
So, what are you reading?
Right now, I'm reading Ragtime by E.L. Doctorow. It's a pretty classic book. It was written in the 70s and it's a sweeping novel set at the turn of the last century. And it's got all kinds of historical figures walking through it, like Harry Houdini and Sigmund Freud. I have only read about 50 pages so far, but I'm really enjoying it.
What attracted you to it in the first place?
Well, I've read several of Doctorow's stories over the year, and he's, you know, a pretty well-known writer, and I've always wanted to read this book. It's considered his best, so I've had it on my list for a while.
So you're only a few pages into that one. I hate to ask, what are you going to read next?
Well, next I'm going to read a book of short stories called Pastoralia by George Saunders. He's a contemporary writer that a lot of people are excited about these days. I'd compare him to Kurt Vonnegut, somebody like that. His stories accentuate the excesses of modern life and depict scary and fascinating worlds. Interesting stuff.
Have you read Kurt Vonnegut?
Yes, I've read pretty much of Kurt Vonnegut's books when I was in high school. I devoured all of his novels. I'm a big fan of his.
So, if you had all the time in the world, what would you like to read?
I think I would take that opportunity to reread some of my favourite classics that I don't know if I'll ever have time to get back to. Things like John Steinbeck's East of Eden and 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. I also want to reread The Adventures and Misadventures of Mackerel.
What book is that? I've never heard of that book.
It's by Alvaro Mutis, and he's actually a friend of Gabriel Garcia Marquez's from way back. And the book is about a mysterious sailor called Mackerel who travels the world and gets caught up in all sorts of adventures and misadventures, obviously, and it's really a remarkable book. Pretty unique. I've never read anything like it. I definitely recommend it. One of my favourites.
Thanks a lot, Max. That was Max Mason, creator of the literary blog The Millions. He joined us from Potomac, Maryland.
My pleasure.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now, you will hear the text again.
This week's summer reader is Mr. Max Mason. By day, he writes for financial newsletters and websites. But in his free time, he manages and writes for his literary blog, The Millions. Mr. Mason lives in Philadelphia, but we have reached him at his parents' home in Potomac, Maryland. Welcome to the show, Max.
Thanks for having me.
So, what are you reading?
Right now, I'm reading Ragtime by E.L. Doctorow. It's a pretty classic book. It was written in the 70s, and it's a sweeping novel set at the turn of the last century. And it's got all kinds of historical figures walking through it, like Harry Houdini and Sigmund Freud. I have only read about 50 pages so far, but I'm really enjoying it.
What attracted you to it in the first place?
Well, I've read several of Doctorow's stories over the year, and he's, you know, a pretty well-known writer. And I've always wanted to read this book. It's considered his best, so I've had it on my list for a while.
So you're only a few pages into that one. I hate to ask, what are you going to read next?
Well, next I'm going to read a book of short stories called Pastoralia by George Saunders. He's a contemporary writer that a lot of people are excited about these days. I'd compare him to Kurt Vonnegut, somebody like that. His stories accentuate the excesses of modern life and depict scary and fascinating worlds. Interesting stuff.
Have you read Kurt Vonnegut?
Yes, I've read pretty much of Kurt Vonnegut's books when I was in high school. I devoured all of his novels. I'm a big fan of his.
So if you had all the time in the world, what would you like to read?
I think I would take that opportunity to reread some of my favourite classics that I don't know if I'll ever have time to get back to. Things like John Steinbeck's East of Eden and 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. I also want to reread The Adventures and Misadventures of Mackerel.
What book is that? I've never heard that book.
It's by Alvaro Mutis, and he's actually a friend of Gabriel Garcia Marquez's from way back. And the book is about a mysterious sailor called Mackerel who travels the world and gets caught up in all sorts of adventures and misadventures, obviously, and it's really a remarkable book. Pretty unique. I've never read anything like it. I definitely recommend it. One of my favourites.
Thanks a lot, Max. That was Max Mason, creator of the literary blog The Millions. He joined us from Potomac, Maryland.
My pleasure.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers.
Задание 3.9. Вы услышите интервью с бывшим президентом США Биллом Клинтоном. В заданиях 3.9 запишите в поле ответа цифру 1, 2 или 3, соответствующую выбранному вами варианту ответа. Вы услышите запись дважды. У вас есть 50 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданиями.
Now we are ready to start.
It's been more than 10 years since you left office, and you look more physically fit now than you did then. Is the secret in not having to deal with the White House press corps?
No, I'm working as hard as ever. But after my heart surgery and my stent, I decided I had to try a radically more heart-friendly diet, and I started watching what I ate. And I tried to walk a lot and do some work in the weight room. I feel great.
Let's talk about the Clinton Global Initiative. How do you choose the specific issues you're going to tackle?
One of the things we try to do is modulate them and shape them every year based on what our members want. We can introduce commitments specifically designed to perform some good things like improving education opportunities for women and girls who are likely to be left out of the educational systems of their countries. Or we can study how we can use technology that benefits low-income kids in the US and around the world. Things like that.
In Haiti, one of the biggest problems is that the forests were cut down many years ago and have never been replaced. Why do we still have this situation?
For most poor people in the world, where deforestation is a problem, it's a real choice because nobody's really come to them in their area and helped to create jobs. Nobody has given them a chance to participate in a sustainable society. All they know is that their kids have to eat tonight, and if they cut this tree down and sell it for charcoal, they can stay alive for a couple more days. You have to give them another way to make a living.
The same choice was posed after the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. While the oil was still leaking, we could hear, "You can't regulate because it will cost jobs." Are we stuck in the old way of thinking?
Yes, there was an immediate blowback when people started talking about having a moratorium on offshore drilling. Why? Because those people make a living doing that, and they have no idea how they can make a living doing anything else. I still believe the American people have not been adequately sold on the fact that we can create a million times more jobs by maximising our solar and wind capacity. We've got to build a new world here. The old world is certain, and the new world is uncertain. That's why normally the people against change defeat the forces of change, and we have to overcome that.
The Clinton Global Initiative is now more than 5 years old and has helped raise $63 billion. What's your pitch? How do you persuade people to help?
I believe people should think about their children and grandchildren in the first place. It is clearly not sustainable to have this much wealth concentrated in so few hands with a weak middle class, where people can easily drop out and be plunged into poverty. So when I persuade wealthy people to support our initiatives, I always tell them that we live in an interdependent world, and therefore all these good things I am trying to get people to do are actually in their self-interest.
Jimmy Carter is said to have set the standard for being a productive former president. When you left office, did you consult with him?
I've been in almost constant contact with Carter since I was in office. I went down to the Carter Library and I followed very closely what he did with monitoring elections and promoting human rights. I had also studied the careers of other successful former presidents, like Theodore Roosevelt, who started a new political movement, and William Howard Taft, who went to the Supreme Court. Herbert Hoover oversaw the reorganization of the federal government, and he was actually an immensely successful former president.
You talked about giving advice to kids coming out of college today. Would you tell them to enter politics, journalism, or philanthropy?
I would say, first of all, they have something that most human beings in history didn't have, the ability to make such a choice. So I would say, find something you care about, that's the most important. And then I would say, if you go into the military or teaching, inherently serving others, give it all you've got. And if you go into a profession that has no connection to other people, except indirectly, where you can acquire some financial success, then take some part of your life to do something for other people, because the world is interdependent, and it's too unequal and too unstable.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now, you will hear the text again.
It's been more than 10 years since you left office, and you look more physically fit now than you did then. Is the secret in not having to deal with the White House press corps?
No, I'm working as hard as ever, but after my heart surgery and my stent, I decided I had to try a radically more heart-friendly diet, and I started watching what I ate. And I tried to walk a lot and do some work in the weight room. I feel great.
Let's talk about the Clinton Global Initiative. How do you choose the specific issues you're going to tackle?
One of the things we try to do is modulate them and shape them every year based on what our members want. We can introduce commitments specifically designed to perform some good things, like improving education opportunities for women and girls who are likely to be left out of the educational systems of their countries. Or we can study how we can use technology that benefits low-income kids in the US and around the world. Things like that.
In Haiti, one of the biggest problems is that the forests were cut down many years ago and have never been replaced. Why do we still have this situation?
For most poor people in the world, where deforestation is a problem, it's a real choice because nobody's really come to them in their area and helped to create jobs. Nobody has given them a chance to participate in a sustainable society. All they know is that their kids have to eat tonight, and if they cut this tree down and sell it for charcoal, they can stay alive for a couple more days. You have to give them another way to make a living.
The same choice was posed after the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. While the oil was still leaking, we could hear, "You can't regulate because it will cost jobs." Are we stuck in the old way of thinking?
Yes, there was an immediate blowback when people started talking about having a moratorium on offshore drilling. Why? Because those people make a living doing that, and they have no idea how they can make a living doing anything else. I still believe the American people have not been adequately sold on the fact that we can create a million times more jobs by maximising our solar and wind capacity. We've got to build a new world here. The old world is certain, and the new world is uncertain. That's why normally the people against change defeat the forces of change, and we have to overcome that.
The Clinton Global Initiative is now more than 5 years old and has helped raise $63 billion. What's your pitch? How do you persuade people to help?
I believe people should think about their children and grandchildren in the first place. It is clearly not sustainable to have this much wealth concentrated in so few hands with a weak middle class, where people can easily drop out and be plunged into poverty. So when I persuade wealthy people to support our initiatives, I always tell them that we live in an interdependent world, and therefore all these good things I am trying to get people to do are actually in their self-interest.
Jimmy Carter is said to have set the standard for being a productive former president. When you left office, did you consult with him?
I've been in almost constant contact with Carter since I was in office. I went down to the Carter Library and I followed very closely what he did with monitoring elections and promoting human rights. I had also studied the careers of other successful former presidents, like Theodore Roosevelt, who started a new political movement, and William Howard Taft, who went to the Supreme Court. Herbert Hoover oversaw the reorganization of the federal government, and he was actually an immensely successful former president.
You talked about giving advice to kids coming out of college today. Would you tell them to enter politics, journalism, or philanthropy?
I would say, first of all, they have something that most human beings in history didn't have, the ability to make such a choice. So I would say, find something you care about, that's the most important. And then I would say, if you go into the military or teaching, inherently serving others, give it all you've got. And if you go into a profession that has no connection to other people, except indirectly, where you can acquire some financial success, then take some part of your life to do something for other people, because the world is interdependent, and it's too unequal and too unstable.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test.
Время, отведенное на выполнение заданий, истекло.